Hi everybody, welcome to Toro Sports Talks. I'm your host, Peter Toro. After a long layoff with school and finals, we're back, and we're going to try to make this more of a weekly occurrence. With that being said, plenty of women's sports going on, so let's catch up. National Women's Soccer League is in full force right now. We're going to be talking about the Orlando Pride and a couple other teams and top players within the league. The French Open kicked off on Sunday with big news coming out of Naomi Osaka's camp that she has withdrawn from the competition. I have a couple takes on that and how horrible it is for the sport of tennis. Also going to be going over the WNBA and their fantastic season, as well as early MVP candidates. Going to be talking about gymnastics and Simone Biles continuing to shatter records. And last but not least, the College World Series for softball kicks off on Thursday. We're going to be talking about the highs, lows, what to expect of the tournament so far, and also projecting our favorites for the tournament going ahead. Without further ado, let's go. The National Women's Soccer League is in the middle of its season right now with Orlando Pride leading the way. They're on fire, sitting in first place with 10 points and 3 straight wins. The front three for the Orlando Pride are Alex Morgan, Sydney LaRue, and Taylor Kornecki. They have been a huge offensive threat with 5 goals between them and 3 assists. Marta also got in on the action. The Brazilian star scored in their last game against Kansas City to lead the Pride to another win over the weekend. The Pride have always had the star power to be and compete as one of the best teams in the NWSL, but between injuries and poor defense, the team has fallen flat. This year, manager and head coach Mark Skinner has really been able to capture lightning in a bottle with some of his older veterans, and they've been able to stay healthy and return to form. This year, they have a +3 goal differential behind top play from their goalkeeper, Ashlyn Harris, who picked up the clean sheet over Kansas City. The team has the potential to be hit hard by the Olympics, though, losing Marta, Alex Morgan, and backup goalkeeper Aaron McLeod for Olympic duties and international competition. But most teams will be hit hard with the international break, with no break to the national women's soccer season. When at full force, though, the Pride are a dangerous team that can compete with any team in the league. Something to note is that right now, Ashlyn Harris and Allie Krieger, who are two normal call-ups for the U.S. women's national team, have not received a call-up from head coach Vlatko Andonovski. At first, it seemed that Ashlyn Harris and Allie Krieger weren't getting the call-up due to their adoption of their new child. However, it seems like they've fallen out of form of Vlatko Andonovski and his supporting staff. So it'll be interesting to see if the two U.S. women's national team vets get the call-up for the Olympics, given that they've been left out of trainings. So that is certainly something to keep an eye on for U.S. women's national roster ahead of the Olympic break. More news in the National Women's Soccer League. Megan Rapinoe and O.L. Reign took on Portland Thorns last week in Portland in the Cascadia rivalry, with O.L. Reign winning the match. Rapinoe had this to say from the match. "It's a great atmosphere. Obviously, the Thorns fans need no introduction. They're incredible. They have one big problem, though. It's that they love me. So it's really difficult for them to cheer against me. So when I score, I had to go right over there and really talk my shit. I was trying to talk shit to them, and they just didn't know what to do. And then finally, someone gave me like a big double fuck you, middle fingers up. And I was like, that's what I'm talking about. Like, that's the kind of rivalry we want." That quote coming from OL Reign star and national women's star Megan Rapinoe. And it's funny because earlier in the year, she did an interview with GQ magazine. And she said how much she loved playing in Portland. However, she also said how much she thought that the fans loved her. So it's a great rivalry, probably the best rivalry within National Women's Soccer League between Seattle, OL Reign, and the Portland Thorns. So it was a great game. OL Reign pulled out on top 2-1 with Megan Rapinoe scoring one of the 2 goals. Saying that, OL Reign are a team to watch this summer, currently sitting in 7th in the table. They're getting healthy and have firepower all over the field. Tazaria King is at forward, and she's one of the most underrated players, in my opinion, in the league. Getting the opportunity to watch her play this spring on field level was incredible because she's one of the fastest and smartest players tactically, finding spaces and using her speed to her advantage and finding and creating spaces, creating opportunities for the offense. And when you combine Tazaria King with other offensive forces like Megan Rapinoe, Rose Lavelle, Sofia Huerta, Jennifer Marazan, and Leigh Sommer, who are going to be coming over transfer from OL Lyon in France, That makes that offense really dynamic, and Tazaria King being at the top of it really adds a different dimension to that offense. With transfers Jennifer Marazan and Leigh Sommer, the French star as well as the German star, that makes this OL Reign team, easily the most star power team within the National Women's Soccer League. Also, you have Jess Fishlock, the Welsh defender, Quinn, the Canadian defensive midfielder, Lauren Barnes, who just got her 150th cap for OL Reign, as well as another transfer, Buhadi, goalkeeper, the starting goalkeeper for OL Lyon, as well as for France national team. So this team is stacked, and they have to stay within striking distance all year because they're going to be losing those players to the Olympics, to international camps and duties throughout the year. So when they're gone, the players on OL Reign have to keep within striking distance of the National Women's Soccer League, and these players have to stay healthy outside of the Olympics as well. Someone that I think is going to be the most interesting and the most exciting to watch within that team is the addition of Rose Lavelle. Rose Lavelle is, in my opinion, the most exciting soccer player in the league when she's on the ball. She can just do so much amazing things. And given the amount of talent and the amount of offensive force that she already has around her in OL Reign, it's going to be really exciting to see what that team can do offensively. Obviously, they still got to get some chemistry together because none of these players have ever played all together. And coming together in the middle of a season isn't going to be the easiest thing. And I think you're going to it's going to put a lot of pressure on OL Reign to get on fire right out of the gates once all these players are together, because they're going to be missing so much time, like I said, for the Olympics and international break. Alrighty, moving on to the French Open, we're going to start off talking about Naomi Osaka. This is the statement she released yesterday on why she was withdrawing from the French Open in Roland Garros. "Hey everyone, this isn't a situation I ever imagined or intended when I posted a few days ago in reference to posting that she would not be taking media questions for her mental health post-game. I think now the best thing for the tournament, the other players, and my well-being is that I withdraw so that everyone can get back to focusing on the tennis going on in Paris. I never wanted to be a distraction, and I accept that my timing was not ideal and my message could have been clearer. More importantly, I would never trivialize mental health or use the term lightly. The truth is that I have suffered long bouts of depression since the US Open in 2018, and I have had a really hard time coping with that. Anyone that knows me knows I'm introverted, and anyone that has seen me at the tournaments will notice that I'm often wearing headphones as to help dull my social anxiety. Though the tennis press has always been kind to me, and I want to apologize especially to all the cool journalists who I may have hurt, I'm not a natural public speaker and get huge waves of anxiety before I speak to world's media. I get really nervous and find it stressful to always try to engage and give you the best answers I can. So here in Paris, I was already feeling vulnerable and anxious, so I thought it would be better to exercise self-care and skip the press conferences. I announced it preemptively because I do not feel like the rules are quite outdated in parts, and I wanted to highlight that. I wrote privately to the tournament, apologizing and saying that I would be more than happy to speak with them after the tournament as the slams are intense. I'm going to take some time away from the court now, but when the time is right, I really want to work with the tour to discuss ways we can make things better for the players, press, and fans. Anyways, hope you are all doing well and staying safe. Love you guys. I'll see you when I see you." All right. So I have a lot of issues with the French Open, and none of them revolve around Naomi Osaka. Only animosity towards the French Open and the president and their decision to fine Naomi Osaka. Originally, they fined her $20,000 for not going to the first press conference. And then they said after that the continued penalty could be for her being disqualified from the tournament. This is so stupid, and it's spelled S-T-O-O-P-I-D. That's how stupid and dumb they are for doing this stuff. Like, the French Open, it comes down to one point and one point only. Is tennis better or worse without Naomi Osaka in it? Do they really think that tennis, who nobody is watching, but Naomi Osaka is the top grossing athlete for women's sports. She is number 15 in the world, according to Sportico, for top athletes altogether. Last year, she made $55.2 million. So she is literally the main draw for the sport. You're trying to tell me that forcing her to withdraw from the competition is the best thing for the French Open for tennis? That's what it comes down to. It comes down to whether they think having Naomi Osaka not play is a good or bad thing. obviously they think it's a good thing because they wouldn't have fined her $20,000 for not doing a post-game conference, which is ridiculous. Nobody watches tennis and then says, oh, let me stick around for the post-game conference. Or nobody doesn't watch the tennis match to watch the post-game conference. Stupid. Dumb. Here is your top player in the world for the sport. And she says that she has mental health issues and that she needs some time and that she thinks that it would be best for her mental health during Mental Health Awareness Month to step away from post-game conferences and not take questions. Have you ever listened to some of the questions that they ask? Here's an example of one of the questions that was asked to Coco Gauff. You are often compared to the Williams sisters. Maybe it's because you're black, but I guess it's because you're talented and maybe American too. The reporter started their question with. This is one of the questions that was just asked to Coco Gauff during the French Open. And we're going to sit here and ask ourselves why Naomi Osaka maybe doesn't want to get asked these stupid ass questions. What is that question? That's a horrible question. This is their job, is to ask dumb ass questions like that. Like, oh, you're black. There's an observation. You're a good tennis player, too. Maybe that's why people compare you to the Williams sisters, Coco. And then we sit here and we're going to force Naomi Osaka to pay fines and force her to withdraw from the competition because she feels that uncomfortable. Where's the question from tennis coming to ask, hey, why is it that our players are feeling so mentally exhausted and they get anxiety from doing these press conferences? Where's that question? Why is the question not being, how can we make this better for Naomi Osaka and for tennis players and for our sport? Why is that not the question? Instead, they go and they attack Naomi Osaka, who's only making you money, only bringing people in, only making fans watch. And instead, this is how players get forced out. This is how players quit. It happened with Jordan. It's dumb media questions. You make them do this dumb shit that doesn't actually matter to the sport. Nobody is watching tennis matches to say, oh, now I want to hear Naomi Osaka talk. People say, no, wow, I want to watch her compete. I want to watch what this woman can do on the tennis court because right now she is literally the best tennis athlete in the planet. And yet, we're not going to be able to watch her in one of the major tournaments because the French Open is full of a bunch of dumbasses fining her instead of just letting her play tennis. It's stupid. It also should be noted that the president of the French Open would not take questions on this matter at his press conference. He refused to take questions. I think that's the most ironic and bullshit thing on the planet, and it shows you how dumb and messed up the French Open is, as well as the sport of tennis, how messed up and how wrong they are. So first, you're going to fine Naomi Osaka for not going to her post-game conference. Okay, that's fine. She said whatever. She said, this is what's best for my mental health, and she said that I hope that my fine money goes to an organization and a foundation that helps mental health. Fair enough. Then they threaten to kick her out of the tournament. She says, you know what? I'll just withdraw because this obviously is a bigger deal to them. I'm not going to deal with this. It's too much for my mental health. I'm getting anxiety over it. This is too much. Okay. That's horrible because now you're depriving everyone of watching one of, if not the best tennis star in the world, compete in one of the largest tournaments in the world. Okay. Again, it's dumb. It's stupid. I'm angry about it. You're not listening to players for tennis. You're not listening to them. Pay attention. Wake up. Wake up. It's stupid. This is how you lose your best players. Again, if you're okay with that, okay. Okay, tennis association, that's okay. You're going to lose one of your best players. That's fine. But then you're going to hold a press conference and you're not going to take questions that you just fined Naomi Osaka for not taking. That's stupid. Like, you have to be kidding me. This is literally the most ridiculous thing going on in the world of sports right now. The French Open president literally refused to take questions at his own press conference regarding Naomi Osaka not taking questions for her post-game press conference. Are you kidding me? That's ridiculous. And this is why it's so ridiculous and it's so bad, because you have all this negative media coverage and nobody's covering the tournament that's going on, because nobody's going to cover the French Open. Nobody does. It's fine. Women's sports, nobody's going to cover it. It's fine. 4% of total media coverage is devoted to women's sports every year. So the one time that they're going to cover it right now is going to be for a negative news story showing how bad the Tennis Association is treating Naomi Osaka. And that's going to be all the news coverage for this entire French Open. And whenever tennis comes up, is going to be how bad this is for women's sports and everything. It's only going to be negative coverage. It's not positive. It doesn't do anything to grow the game. It stunts the growth of tennis. And it's going to take away from one of the best players on the planet playing from her sport. Great. Great job, tennis. You're doing a great job. Keep it up. Keep it up with the French Open. So now, we'll actually give it the positive news coverage that it deserves, because it's a great tournament. You got plenty of great athletes competing in it, and plenty of great badass women that are doing wonderful things. So with all that being said, we'll get to the positives coming out of the French Open. My favorite to win the tournament, now that Naomi Osaka is out, is Iga Swiatek. Swiatek is coming off of some big wins. She just beat Pliskova from the Czech Republic and Coco Gauff, a young American. Both great competition for Swiatek ahead of the French Open. I just love the way she plays the game. She's so focused and so fierce when she's on the court. She's really dynamic between her serves changing speeds, as well as being able to force play when she wants to, when she's feeling comfortable. And her front hand and backhand is, I think, really the best in the game right now. Another player to watch, as always, is the GOAT, Serena Williams. She had trouble in her opening set in the first round of the French Open, going to the tiebreak, where then, in typical Serena fashion, she was able to turn it on and just never look back. So I think, again, with Naomi Osaka out, and you kind of saw the passing of the torch at the U.S. Open last year when Osaka really blew Williams out. Now that Williams doesn't have to worry about that, I think it's going to be really interesting to see her, and if she can get into the deeper stages of the French Open, I don't see, a whole lot of people being able to get in her way, because when Serena Williams turns it on, nobody's getting in her way to stop her. She is still, without a doubt, the best player in history, and she's the GOAT. 24 titles speaks for itself. She's looking for that 25th to become the number one all time. And with Osaka out, I think this is the best opportunity that she has to gain that title. Moving on to the WNBA, we're going to be covering Laisha Claire, and one of my favorite players. She's a trans athlete. Was with the New York Liberty, but she was dropped. Then the Lynx were short on players due to injury and picked her up, and she stepped right in, contributing 12 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal in the Lynx's first win over the hot Connecticut Sun. It was really great to see that Clarendon was picked up by a team, because she's honestly one of the best players, in my opinion, in the league. Very underrated. It just goes to show that the WNBA is in desperate need for expansion, and she's one of the players that more than needs to be on a team. She's a great talent for the league, also brings a lot of great diversity and wonderful, in addition to being one of the best players and brings a lot of diversity on the court, she brings plenty of diversity off the court too, and she's a wonderful example of giving trans athletes a platform to perform on and expanding people's knowledge on trans rights that are constantly being taken away. And we've seen that at the high school level with a lot of states coming down with new laws, finding ways to exclude trans athletes from participating in sports. And you hate to see it. It's horrible. It's disgusting. That certainly isn't the number one issue with the educational system in America right now, is allowing trans athletes to be able to participate in whatever sports they want. That's not at the top of my list of things that we need to be talking about, but that's just my opinion. I talked a lot about that topic in my last podcast, so I'm going to try to stay away from going on a rant for that. But if you want to listen to me talk more about trans athletes and their belonging in high school sports, you can go back and listen to my last podcast about that. Continuing on the WNBA, early year MVP pick for me is Tina Charles. She has led the league in scoring at a clip of 26.7 points a game this year. The Washington Mystics star has been lighting it up after taking a year off for COVID and activism reasons. Charles was let go by the New York Liberty, and she has not forgotten. She made them pay severely, scoring 34 points and grabbing 9 boards against the Liberty earlier in the year. The Mystics have struggled to open up the year with a 2-4 record, but also have been playing without superstar Elena Delladon. So once she returns and is healthy, the Mystics will have one of, if not the most dangerous front courts in the league. And I think it's really important to show that, you know, Tina Charles, one of the most skilled players in the league, she's been really running point as well as playing down low for the Mystics offense. She's one of the most dynamic and exciting players to watch in the league right now. She is the most prolific scorer in the W. So it's been a lot of fun to watch her play, and I just can't wait until Elena Delladon and her are both on the court together. Now, there might be some chemistry issues because they haven't been able to play, with Elena Delladon also not playing last year, sitting out due to COVID and health reasons. But Tina Charles and her together, those two bigs playing down low, it's going to be really exciting to see if the Washington Mystics can get healthy, and because those are two of the most exciting stars that the league has to offer. The Seattle Storm have a new coach. Noel Quinn becomes the head coach of the Seattle Storm, with Dan Hughes retiring. However, he will remain as an assistant coach for the Olympic team for the United States. Quinn, who was a past player for the Seattle Storms, becomes the one and only black woman as a coach in the WNBA. I think it's really great to see, considering that black women make up the majority of the league. So Noelle Quinn, she's been a fantastic player for the Storm in the past. She was a very experienced player playing for over 10 years. And it's going to be great to see her. She was an assistant coach under Dan Hughes, and Dan Hughes has produced some of the best coaches in the WNBA as well as in the NBA, with Becky Hammon being one of his past assistants, James Wade, another past assistant, now coaching the Chicago Sky. So this has been a pipeline for great coaches to go on and have successful careers beyond an assistant with the Seattle Storm. So it's going to be really great and really exciting to see Noelle Quinn be the only black woman. Obviously, there needs to be more inclusion and diversity within the league, especially considering that the majority of the league is made up of black women. But hopefully this is the push that we begin to see more change continuing in the future. A note on the WNBA schedule: the Commissioner's Cup is new to the league. It's a new competition that is offering $500,000 potential money for a mid-season competition to the winner and to players. These kinds of competitions happen overseas all the time. However, it's new to the WNBA and gives players a chance to earn more money, as well as the cap increasing due to the new collective bargaining agreement that the WNBA's Players Association and the league was able to come to. So more money is going to the players, as well as more money to teams to be able to bring in new players. So a lot of credit to WNBA Commissioner Kathy Engelbert for listening to players and finding a way to inject more money and energy into the season. Because, you know, a lot of the time you can get teams, you know, it ends up being a couple teams pulling away through the regular season, not a lot to play for some of the more inexperienced and teams that are more towards the bottom of the barrel. But with this midseason competition, it really allows all the teams to be competing for something throughout the year. So it's really good to see the players have another opportunity to earn a little more money. Last note on the WNBA is Brittany Griner threw another dunk down the other night. It was fantastic. I'm going to leave that video link down below in the description if you want to give it a quick look. Moving on to gymnastics, Simone Biles returned to competition after over a year break due to COVID and made history, landing the first ever Yurchenko double pike in history in competition. I'm not sure what the Yurchenko double pike is. I do know that it's Simone Biles doing it, and I saw the clip of her doing it. It's amazing to watch. Biles is the favorite to win gold in all competitions heading into the Olympics, and currently she is the most, in my opinion, the most gifted and must-watch athlete on the planet going into the Tokyo Olympics. The biggest thing here is just being able to watch Simone Biles compete at the U.S. Classic last week, which was on NBC, and continuing to watch her compete going into Tokyo Olympics. She took off the year not competing due to COVID, and she didn't miss a beat. She hasn't missed a beat. She is the most athletic person on the planet, in my opinion. She's must-watch TV because she literally is the GOAT. She does not lose. She is the favorite heading into the Olympics for every single competition in gymnastics. It's pretty much who's playing for second place when it comes to Simone Biles in the gym. Other good news surrounding gymnastics, Chelsea Memel, the 2008 silver medalist in vault, returned from retirement to compete in the U.S. Classic for the first time in 9 years at the age of 32. The mother of two competed in the U.S. Classic and helped break the narrative that once you have kids, you are done. Especially great to see in the world of gymnastics due to the pure stress and demand that is put on gymnast bodies. They tend to only see gymnasts last an Olympic cycle 3-4 years after the age of 20. A lot of gymnasts are written off. So it's amazing to see Chelsea Memel return to the gym mat at the age of 32 after having two kids. It's fantastic, and wish her the best. Last but not least, it's time to talk about College World Series and softball. First, I want to stress how great this tournament has been so far. Every single game, my dad and I have been watching pretty much every single game every single day. And this tournament has been so entertaining. The players have been fantastic. The games have been competitive. They've been close. They've been down to the wire. Every single game has been fantastic to watch. And it's really great to see college softball getting the exposure that it more than deserves, because this is one of the most exciting tournaments in the year. Especially not having it last year, I feel like ESPN has done a great job promoting it, and it's been great to see for the players and for the teams and all the programs involved in the College World Series really taking advantage of this with that year off due to COVID, and seeing them perform at such a high level has been a lot of fun to watch. Saying that, I don't know where they get these umpires to be in charge of these games. The umpires have been absolutely atrocious, and this is a thread in women's sports, and it's something that needs to change and needs to be addressed, because the players and the teams have been fantastic, and that's what brings people to watch them. However, here we are sitting talking about the officiating being it's been a detriment to the games, and this is across the board in the WNBA, in National Women's Soccer League, in college softball. It doesn't stop. In the NWSL, no foul is ever called. In the WNBA, you cannot watch a game without clock management being messed up. It's not hard. In softball, they have just made atrocious call after atrocious call. First of all, the strike zone has been absolutely horrid. The strike zone is not, it's not a hard thing to get right. The strike zone is what it is. Like, it will change a little bit based off of players being shorter or taller. But, I mean, you literally will watch a game and an umpire is so inconsistent behind the plate. Also, I don't think the umpires actually know the rules of softball or baseball, given what I've seen over the past couple weeks. They make obstruction calls when the catcher is 3 feet from home plate, standing in front of the plate, and then don't call obstruction calls when the catcher is literally standing in front of the plate, blocking it, not allowing the runner, impeding the progress of the runner. And they make these calls, and there's no review system. There was a review system for conference tournament play, and then for the College World Series, they got rid of it. So that makes no sense. Try to make that make sense. There was a review system in place for umpires to use and for coaches to use if there was a close play in conference tournaments. However, once you make the playoff, they get rid of the review system. That makes absolutely no sense to me. Now, as bad as the umpires have been, the play has been great. I mean, we've had so many close games, extra inning games, walk-offs, games coming down to the last at-bat. It's been fantastic. Here are the teams playing on Thursday. So the College World Series returns on Thursday, June 9th. All games will be on ESPN. They start at noon and go through 9:30 p.m. on Thursday, June 3rd. The first game is James Madison versus Oklahoma. James Madison, the Dukes, this is their first time appearing in the College World Series, and they've been fantastic behind Odyssey Sims. In the first two games, she struck out 19 batters. The first game went into extra innings, but Odyssey Sims has been fantastic, and she hit a bit of a hiccup in the regional finals, but I think she's going to return to form, and James Madison is going to need her against the offensive juggernaut that is Oklahoma. They are the number one seed going in to the College World Series. The second game in the tournament is Georgia versus Oklahoma State. Georgia has been a bit of a surprise in the tournament, riding one pitcher, Mary Wilson Avant. The Bulldogs have ridden her to a couple complete game shutouts. She's been absolutely lights out for the Dogs, and she's going to need to be against Oklahoma State. Also a big power threat, leading the way, hitting home runs left and right like no one else's business. The third game is between Arizona and Alabama. Alabama is home to Montana Fouts, one of the most dominant power pitchers in the game. Fouts pitched just over 180 innings in the regular season and struck out over 300. Her fastball sits around 70 to 75 miles per hour, with her changeup dipping just below 50 miles per hour. So her ability to change speeds in the strike zone as well as go after hitters makes it really hard to hit her, never mind when it's only 45 feet away. And the late game at 9:30 is between Florida State and UCLA. UCLA is led by Rachel Garcia, who had a 0.78 ERA in the regular season. However, she was touched up against Virginia Tech, so it'll be interesting to see if she returns to her dominant form against Florida State. The Seminoles upset LSU in the regional finals behind great defense from third baseman Sydney Sherrill. Sherrill also is hitting over 500 on the year. So this Florida Seminole team is going to have to continue to play fantastic defense, as well as having some clutch late inning hitting that it found against LSU. Again, even if softball isn't your thing, all these games will be on ESPN, and I highly recommend you watch them because the entire tournament has been fantastic and really exciting with great plays, great players, and it's just been a lot of fun and great energy from all the programs involved in the College World Series, kicking off Thursday, June 3rd at noon. As always, I want to say thank you to everyone for taking the time to listen. This has been Toro Sports Talks. I'm Peter Toro.